notes.
Oh, hey, can I have that?
Sure. No. Nothing to see here, right? Where love is, God is. He that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God. God is love. Therefore love, without distinction, without calculation, without procrastination, love. Lavish it upon the poor where it is very easy, especially upon the rich who often need it most. Most of all upon our equals where it is very difficult and for whom perhaps we each do the least of all. My name is Matt Klinkowski. I'm an alcoholic. I don't normally say my last name, not because I'm, you know, Joe Anonymous, because my last name looks like an eye chart. It's 10 letters long. It's got Slovak, not Polish. It ends in S-K-Y. Before I start, I want to say, because I know he's going to listen to this part, my friend John just celebrated 7 years today, wasn't it? 7 years. So he's not here. But to put it into perspective about how this thing works and how we work sometimes, I met him in like 95, 96, and he's got 7 years. It's not 2002. And one time he said to me, "I failed." I was like, "Well, you're still alive. You're still breathing. You got a chance." So I'll give you the basics. I'm going to be 55 in April. I have a sobriety date. It's November 13th, 1989. I got sober when I was 18. I didn't get sober when I was 18 because I thought it was cool. The last thing I wanted to do was go to a place where there was a bunch of old people with gray hair. If I had hair, it would probably be gray because my beard gets gray. I think you can see that. I have two home groups. One of them is Sunday morning Strongsville Big Book. Meets at 11 o'clock. And I got to tell you, I get to meetings like an hour early all the time or hour and a half. So I don't really know what time it starts, but I know I'm there when it starts. So do with that what you will. And my other home group is Seven Hills Men's Discussion. It meets on Tuesday nights. I know that one's at 8 o'clock. And I like men's meetings. I like AA meetings. I like being around you people. And so if you're ever in the area, if you're ever in Ohio and you're a dude and you want to go to that men's meeting, let me know. But we get there at 6:30, 6:45, and we set up the meeting because that's what we do. And then we sit around and we bust chops and we read books and we do all kinds of things, and then the meeting starts. I've been passing out those four absolute pamphlets, and if you didn't get one and you want them, I think I have four left. My wife has them, so attack her, not me. She got them. She right there. I thought I handed them to you. They're under your chair, dear. She's got them. There's something that popped into my head yesterday during the sobriety countdown. I was watching everybody stand up and sit down. It's like being kind of in church, you know, sit, stand, kneel, sit, stand, kneel. And there's a lot of people in this room that have been sober a lot longer than I have. And there's a lot of people in this room that have been sober less time than I have. But I don't know if there's anybody in this room that loves you guys as much as I do. You're my people. And I don't like saying that because it sounds mushy and silly. And I don't like saying it because what if you say, "I don't want anything to do with you"? That's my fear. You tell somebody you love them, that's why I've always had a problem with that. I tell you I love you, and you say, that's cool. Cool story, bro. So I would never want to tell people I loved them. I would never say, "You're my friend." I'd say, "I'm your friend." And one time I was sitting in front of a gym talking on the phone to my friend Chris. And we're talking about blah, 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 and I was having a really hard time. And he said, da-da-da-da-da, "You're my friend." And I said, "Wait, what'd you say? Repeat that." "You're an idiot." "No, the part after that." "You're the dumbest person I know." "No, in the middle." And he said, "You're my friend and I love you." I said, "Is that true?" He's like, "Are you kidding? Why would you even ask?" I said, "Because I need to know." He said, "Yeah, you're my friend." We're still friends today. And sometimes I forget that. You know, when I read the 11-step prayer, I say it every morning. There's that part in there. It says it's better to love than to be loved. But I have an idea. It's part of my vision for me and maybe for you. Instead of being loving and not being loved, how about I do both? Because sometimes the most loving act I can do is let other people love me. And that's difficult and it's frightening. And now I said it out loud, so a bunch of you are going to come up and get all, "Well, I want to give you a hug." Oh, man. Oof. But, so, question. Is anybody here a single mother or was born to a single mother? Nobody. Okay. Is anybody here married into a family and they inherited a bunch of siblings, all that other stuff? All right, nobody. Okay. Has anybody here ever been so scared, just of everyday life, they don't even know what to do. Anybody? Nobody. Okay. See, I have this disease that tells me, this is me. Chuck Chamberlain talks about it in his book, this is me and this is the world. I'm over here all by myself. God wants nothing to do with me. I'm being punished for something. I'm not even sure what. I was born and raised Catholic, so, you know, they have the concept of original sin. Well, I got yours, too. I'm that bad. And I don't understand this. And when I was, like I said, I was born to a single mom, and when I was a kid, she married this guy. She met him in October of 1974, and she married him in December of 1974. And they stayed married till they both passed away. Well, I guess that, because she didn't get remarried when he died. And I got this guy who, my last name was Wilson, and I always like to say, like Bill. Yeah. And my last name was Wilson, and my mom married this guy, and it became Klinkovsky. And one time I was just, you know, me being me. I said, hey, Ma, you couldn't pick the guy Jones, Smith, Johnson. You got to pick this guy? And he just looks at me. He's reading the paper, and he just folds the paper down and glares. And when they got married, I called him Dad. He never treated me like anything but a son, and I'm going to tell you how I treated him. And I'm going to tell you the things I did. I don't know if my childhood has anything to do with my alcoholism. I know that I had a good childhood. We grew up in Cleveland. We were lower middle class, and we were happy. We did a lot of stuff, but I never fit in. I was this kid, I was a weird kid. One of the games I would play, my mother told me about this, and then I remembered it, was I would play Jesus. But not going around touching, you know, laying hands or any of that other cool stuff, you know, turning water into wine, which would make me real popular in this room. I would take two pieces of wood and I'd fashion them into a cross on the driveway and I would lay on it. Now, my mother said she would just stare. I'd look out the driveway and I'd say, huh. My mom's Sandy, my dad's Steve. She'd go, Steve, he's doing it again. And my dad would look out and they would just be like, huh. You know, when I was a little boy, it was me and my mom, and my mom said when I was a little kid, I'd walk around the house like this. She said, you were the most intense child I've ever seen, and I couldn't figure out why. She said, one of the things I did that was the strangest thing in the world is I would take a potato and an onion, and I'd walk up to her, and I knew one word. The word was peel. And she'd peel them, and she said, I'd walk through the house taking a bite out of each. Yeah, it's bizarre. And I wish I was telling you about, like, my brother, but that was me. So, I'm born and raised in Cleveland, and I'm doing all the things kids do, and I've always got this thing in my head, I'm different than every single human being on the planet. I know I am, and you can't convince me otherwise. I know it. And two things happened in 1980. One of them was my grandfather died. My grandfather was my dad's dad, and he was the most beautiful human being I've ever met in my entire life. And when I was a kid, this is the kind of guy he is. I'm sitting on his lap or watching TV at his house, and I get up to go to the bathroom, and I get a drink of water, and I come back 10 minutes later. I get up, I go to the bathroom, and I keep doing this. Finally, he says, Matthew, what are you doing in there? I said, well, I go and I go pee, and then I wash my hands because I don't want to get in trouble. I don't know if I did or didn't, but and then I take a drink of water. And he says, do this. When you go in there, don't take that drink of water. See what happens. And I was like, all right. So I go in there, and after 25 minutes, I do my thing. I come out 25 minutes later, I don't have to pee. And I was like, oh, Grandpa, you're the smartest guy in the world. He's like, that's my guy. I loved that man. And I remember the day he died. I remember it like it was yesterday. I'll never forget it. And I used to say that I missed him, but I don't. I don't miss him anymore. And then in May of 1981, my older brother that I inherited when my folks got married, he ran away from home. And he was my hero. He was everything. When I was a kid, he taught me how to catch. And I would put this glove on my left hand, and he'd throw me the ball, and I'd catch it, and then I'd take the glove off, and I'd throw the ball back. I put the glove back on. And after three or four times, he says, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm catching the ball, and I'm throwing it back to you. Why do you? You don't catch with that hand. I said, yeah, I do. You're watching me. He was like, oh. So he taught me how to catch with my right hand. And I think of all these good times, and there were some bad times. You know, there was some stuff that happened that probably shouldn't have happened, and I don't really need to go into detail on that. I'll tell you about that later. But he ran away from home, and now I'm alone. And I was 10 years old, and I made a decision. The decision was, you stay over there, I'll stay over here. I won't bother you, you don't bother me. I believe in you, God, but you don't believe in me, and that's fine, because I don't need you. And also, real quick, thank you for praying with me before. Thank you very much. The young lady offered to pray with me and helped me out, so thanks. So, New Year's Eve 1982, my mom makes wine coolers. And this was before they sold them, so you had to, you know, get the blender and the ice and all that. And I was like, you know, can I have one? She says, yeah, sure. She pours one. So I drink it. Can I have another one? She says, yeah. See, my only other experience is taking sips off Dad's beer, but they were just booze, and I don't know, maybe you guys have heard it. It's called Applejack. It does not taste like Applejack cereal. Because I grabbed a bottle of it, I saw Applejack, and because I'm the smartest guy in the room, I was like, that's going to taste like the cereal. And it didn't. And it burned, and it got in my nose, and it was awful, and I hated it. But I never said, I'm not going to do that again. I didn't. But I was supposed to be running a timer here, and I forgot. We'll start now. When I tied a buzz on that night, I felt good. I felt at ease. My brother had actually come over to visit for New Year's Eve. And now my brother was home, and I've got a buzz on. I don't know that I have a buzz on. I just know I feel good. And then I got in trouble because one of my problems for a long time was temper. I'm a table flipper over. I'm not always good at it, but I try. You know, you make me mad, there goes the table. You know, and then I do the stare. My dad said I used to remind him of a pro wrestler because I do this a lot too. I point. I don't wave, I point. And I know if some of you have seen that, like I'll see you and I go, hey. And I worked with this girl one time. She goes, can I ask you a question? What are you pointing at? I said, you. She goes, you could just wave like this. That's cool. And I was like, all right. And so every time I'd see her, I'd go to point and I'd be like, ugh. And she would shake her head. She was like 20, you know, and I'm like 40, and she's, you know, teaching me how to be a human being. But what I want to tell you about, I want to get into this, because I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. When I start to drink, I change. I become a different human being. And maybe when I was 14 or 15, I decided with me and a couple of my friends, we're going to get drunk, we're going to tie one on, this is going to be awesome. And I drink a bottle of scotch. And I drink half a bottle of wine that night, too. Now, that's not my favorite drink, just so you can be grossed out. My favorite drink is vermouth. Oh, stop it. I heard all the Canadians love vermouth. Come on. And the reason I drink vermouth is because it said Martini and Rossi on it. So martinis are classy, right? Right? I mean, it doesn't matter if you're wet in your pants. I'm drinking, it says Martini. But I get into this drink, and I decide I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this a lot. Now, I don't have drugs in my story. Here's the extent of my drug use. And my friends, only in AA. Only in AA will they make fun of you with this. I smoked 5 joints and took a Valium. That's it. Not recently, not at the same time. That's it. And the only reason I took a Valium was because I was drunk, and this girl was standing like this. I was standing on her steps. Her brother was my best friend, and she said, open your mouth. And I went, ah. And she threw it in my mouth, and I swallowed it, and then I said, what was that? And she said, it's a Valium. I said, oh, what's Valium? She goes, it's like booze in a pill. And I was like, hell yeah. And it didn't really work, that I remember. But as I got older and I'm drinking more, I start to become this, and I'm not bragging. Please don't think I'm bragging, but I become this monster. I'm an animal. This guy that brought me into, you know, into his family, gave me his last name, always treated me like a son. My dad was probably the second best human being I've ever met after his father. I would get in his face. Now, are there any Marines in here? Anybody? Hoorah. There we go. My dad was a Marine. He got out of the Marine Corps in like 1962. And he would yell. One time they passed a law that said they had to treat the Marines like people. He's like, I can't believe this. This is terrible. And I was like, wait, what? Because when I was in the Marines, they used to beat us to death. And I was like, wait, that's good? That's what you want? But he was tough. But my dad was a gentle, loving man for the most part. And I would get in his face. I'd tell him, you're not my father. I don't have to listen to you. Just imagine that. And I'd do the same thing to my mother. And then I've probably been this size since I was 14. Then I get tough. Now I'm going to fight. I'm going to fight you, old man. You want some of this? And my dad would just be like, no. And he would try to talk to me, and I'd push and push and push. One time in particular, I'm fighting and arguing with my father over something. I'm getting nose to nose because I'm a tough. Now, I weighed 175 pounds. I looked, this is true. I had hair. It was long, and it was kind of stringy. I looked like Axl Rose. I was just this skinny, and my eyes were just this big all the time. I was just like crazy. And I'm fighting and arguing with him, and my mother comes into the room, and we're going nose to nose, and I'm going to kick your ass. I'm going to do all this. You don't have a prayer. And he's just like, oh, boy. And she comes up from the side. Now, my mother is loud, obnoxious, opinionated, verbose, and loud. And she gets loud sometimes, too, kind of like her bouncing baby boy. And she comes up, and she says, blah, 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 blah. And I hear her say, the last thing I heard her say was, Matthew, stop it. You're going to hurt your father. And when she said that, I turned like this. And when I came to, I was on the ground. And my father, I hear her say, Steve, stop it. You're going to kill him. And he lets go, and he doesn't, you know, we all know that, you know. We get beat up, and then we're like, hey, you want more? You want more? That's like that question, like, you want me to take you outside and beat you up? Who says yes to that? But when she said that, I got off, and I said, yeah, I'm calling the cops, which really lit him up, and I had to scoot out of the house. I was always getting thrown out of the house. Christmas, Thanksgiving, my birthday, Arbor Day, Flag Day, any day, you name it, for the Canadians, Boxing Day, out, you, go. One time I got thrown out, I was on crutches. And I thought I had a broken foot, and I storm outside, and I take the crutches, I throw them on the ground. I don't need you, and I don't need those crutches. And my father's like, where are you going? You can't, what's, oh. And he went, okay. And he went back inside. And I had to literally, I stormed around, you know, because you can't just walk, you have to stomp your feet, right? I mean, you got to know I'm mad. And I had to crawl back home, because my foot swelled up real big, and I got no mercy from this guy. He was a terrible father. I got home and he was like, huh, didn't work out the way you didn't think it was going like that, did you? Yeah, nice job. But when I take a drink, I want to drink hard liquor because I get drunker faster. Beer's nice. I developed this incredible capacity for it. There's only one beer I didn't like. I would drink it. I just didn't care for it. It was Rolling Rock. I thought it was awful. And my buddies would get case of Rolling Rock or whatever, and they'd say, hey, you want to, and I'm like, oh God, can you guys get something better? We would drive around, the one guy had his driver's license, they drive around, they want to talk to the girls. Oh man, I'm going to talk to her. I was like, all right, give me your beer. And I would hold your beer, and the second you got out, the second the door shut, I would drink it. Now, as maniacal and as insane as I was like that everywhere. So everybody knew. I went to Catholic schools, and they knew I was I can't believe this guy's out in public, because the comments I would get sometimes. But when I take a drink, I change, and I'm letting my friends do all these, teenage things. And I don't know if some of them are in the room, some of them aren't. They've done the in and out thing. But I'm 15, 16, 17 years old, and I love drinking. I love drinking more than anything in the world, because I know this. And if you can relate to this, you might have the same thing I have. When I walk in that door, every one of you women is checking me out. I know it. I don't blame you. You know, every one of you men is jealous because look at that guy. And you all know you're going to get a whooping. You step to this. I think that's what the kids say, step to this. And I know that. I also know at the same time, every one of you women's like, he looks like he's wearing his dad's suit. I've never seen an uglier human being. And you guys are like, I could take that dude with one hand. At the same time, you don't even notice me. And all that's going on at the same time. I'm the egomaniac with the inferiority complex. And I can't figure out what's going on around me, and it doesn't make any sense. And the people I go to school with and I associate with, that I work with, they don't have these kinds of thoughts and problems. And all I want to do is, I wanted to be a rock star. I was either going to be a rock star or I didn't have a plan B. By the way, I don't play an instrument. I don't. No instruments. I took guitar lessons in the fourth grade. I did it for like a month, and I was like, man, this is hard. And I just quit. But all my favorite musicians, all my favorite guys from whatever band, one day a buddy of mine pointed out, they're all dead. All your heroes are dead. And I was like, that means they went out in a blaze of glory. He's like, no, it means they're dead. I mean, why don't you pick that guy? He's still alive. And I was like, whatever, man. I knew I was going to drink till the end of my life. I knew it. As sure as I'm standing here, I knew that was going to happen. The summer of 1988 is one big blur. I quit drinking. I went on this church retreat for teens, and it was great, and I was like, man, you know how you feel now? That's how I felt. Yeah, woohoo. And I'm quitting drinking. That's it. No more. And that lasted to the end of May. The retreat was at the end of April. I need this. I need this relief. I can't function in this world without it. I sit, and I think about drinking. And I love scotch, and I love tequila. Whiskey makes me a little nuts. One time in an hour, I drank 12 shots of this stuff called George Dickel sipping whiskey. And if you haven't heard of it, there's a reason. But I'm drinking, and I'm doing all the things I'm doing, and I'm running around. I'm just crazy. I get this girlfriend, and she starts talking to me about my drinking. And I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. I really love this. This is great. I'm glad we're having this conversation all the time. She convinces me to go to an AA meeting. So I go. And the first meeting I go to is, first I wound up in the hospital, not for detox, just because I was nuts. And this doctor comes in, and he sits down at the edge, or next to me, and he's looking at me, and I'm looking at him, just like this. And he says, your eyes are yellow. And I said, huh, no kidding, because I don't know what to say. And he says, do you drink? I said, absolutely. This doctor, I'm 17. You can't drink at 17. What planet you live on? And he says, do you do drugs? Now, that offended me. Absolutely not. And he was like, aha. And I'm thinking, I hope they don't drug test me. Because my blood alcohol level was probably like 30%. But I get out and I go to this meeting. The first meeting I go to, and this is the stuff I like to talk about, is you guys. When I take a drink, my thinking changes, the way I process information, the way I receive information, the way I transmit information, that all changes. You are not my brothers and sisters. You are all, as my sponsor says, you're all sons of bitches. And I want to fight every one of you. And I'm tough, so I'll fight you. I'm that guy. I'm like, why don't you get a couple of your buddies and come on over? And you're like, all right. You know, I'm not the brightest bulb in the package. I don't know why I can't just, all I want to do is drink and be left alone, and I want to have a normal life while I'm drinking. I don't want to stop drinking, but I don't want the consequences. The consequences is my grades go from a 3.124 fourth quarter sophomore year. Yes, I remember that. I made the merit roll. I took Latin. Yeah. Fourth quarter senior year, 0.964. Halfway through the fourth quarter, my English teacher comes walking up. She's just standing next to me. And I kind of look up and I look down, and she just leans down and she says, you have 34 points. Not 34%, 34 points. There is no way you graduate, no way. She kept on going, and I was just like, what are you gonna do? I graduated. I don't know why I graduated. Maybe that's God taking care of me, because I'm also a coward. I don't want to live. I'm too afraid to live, but I'm too afraid to die, so I want you to kill me. I don't know how I'm gonna make that work, but it's gonna happen, right? So that's the kind of person you're dealing with. And I go to my first meeting. It's called the Pearl Road Group. It meets at 8:30 at the time, Cleveland, Ohio. I walk in. There's probably close to 100 people in that meeting. And every one of them was alive when Noah's Ark was here. I walked in, and I was just like, wow. I'm 17. And I'm looking around going, this is pretty terrible. And I go in, and this, you know, I noticed a couple things that night. I go with this guy, this secretary's name was Stan. He calls me up front. I go up, you know, because I raise my hand, I'm new. After the meeting, he gives me a big book, which I still have. He gives me a 24-hour book, which I still have. And he gave me a meeting schedule, which I don't still have. But the thing I noticed about alcoholics, they don't listen very well, because they, you know, anybody new, first meeting. You know, I am Matt. Hey, Bert. No, it's Matt. Hey, Al. I'm like, what? What's wrong with you people? But I'm here, and I'm doing these things, and I'm running, you know, I guess we're in for the duration. So I hear somebody say, you got to work the steps. I take the meeting schedule, the Cleveland meeting schedule. When you open it up, it's got the 12 steps inside. I did 9 of the 12 steps. I did my searching and fearless moral inventory that night, like this. And I put a little check mark next to it. And I went to meetings, and this one guy said to me, meet me at this meeting. I said, okay. Well, I got there at like 8:35. The meeting was already started. I come in. He's not like, oh, you're here. You're never late to a meeting. No, he didn't say that. He looked at me and he said, you're late. I said, I thought it started at 8:35. He said, you would have been late anyway. And I was like, don't like this guy. You made the list, pal. And I'm going to these meetings, and they're nice. They're mixed meetings. And everybody was really nice, except for that guy. And it was okay. I don't really want to quit drinking, though. See, I find out this girl that convinced me to go to the meeting, she was an Al-Anon because of her grandmother. And we're married. I'm dating other people, but we're married. You know, I like to say that. And she's doing well in her life. I communicated with her on Facebook, and she was like, how are things going? I was like, pretty good. Are you still? Yes, I still. And So I'm going to the, and I don't want to be here, see, because I'm not an alcoholic. I look around you, in the hat right there. You're alcoholic. I can tell by looking at you. You. You, definitely. But me, I'm a nice guy that just wants to drink and be left alone. I'm a really, really nice guy. Now, at this point in my life, my family doesn't really have much to do with me. I'm living in the attic. I'm constantly throwing punches at people in my family, and I'm constantly losing those fights, consequently. I mean, just, it was just, I look back on it now, and I'm disgusted. But I think about it a lot because I want to remember. Because when I look back at that, and I look here, where I'm at now, it's like night and day. But it's not night and day because of me. It's night and day because of you. But I'm going to these meetings, and New Year's Eve, my buddy's having a party. And he says, come to the party. You don't have to drink. I was like, all right, cool. I go to the party. You know how long that lasts? No, I don't have a sponsor. I don't even know what that is. I'm not working a program. I didn't know what that was. If you would have said work a program, I'd have been like, well, yeah, program. Everybody knows. You know, I don't know what it means. So I drink that night. And when I drink that night, I decide because I'm drunk, his sister has his car keys. He got a new car, new to him. It's a big Lincoln Continental type thing. It's just gigantic. She's going to take it for a drive. And I take the keys out. I say, you're drunk. Now, I got to throw this into, I didn't have a driver's license, and I had never driven a car before. So we get in this car, and the ice, the streets are solid ice almost, and I drive, and I hit a patch of ice, and I hit a parked car. And like I'd been doing it for years, I just put it in reverse, backed up, and drove it. And we get back to his house, and he's standing outside talking to somebody, and he looks over, and he sees his front end of his car all smashed. And he goes, my car! I get out, hand him his keys, I pat him on the head, and I say, don't worry about it. And I walk away. And I go home. He lived on my street. So I went home. My mother, when I walk in, she says, have you been drinking? I said, no, I was smoking cigarettes. I don't think anything. What parent wants to think their kid belongs here? You know, what parent wants all this stuff that we all go through? Nobody. I mean, if any of you with, you don't want Jack. I mean, you know, if he never has to step foot in this meeting, great. But if he has to, we know where we are. So from December of 1988, when I went to my first meeting, December 12th, it was a Monday. You can look it up if you want. To November 13th of 1989, also a Monday. I was in and out about 550,000 times. In and out, and in and out, and in and out. One night, I'm working at a cleaner. There's a guy there named Carlos. He was an AA graduate. He had the little paper from the treatment center, and he would pull it out every once in a while. I go, see? And he's standing drinking out of a big, like, 7-Eleven cup, right? And he says, hey, you want to see something? Sure. He takes out a dollar bill. It's all folded. He unfolds it. And I said, that looks like salt. He goes, no, man, it's cocaine. I was like, that's illegal. That was my rationale, too, for not doing drugs. They're illegal. One of the guys I drank with just looked at me and he goes, dude, you're 17. But I see that, and I'm, oh, my God. So he goes to the back of this, like, dry cleaner, and I follow him back there for some ungodly reason. And he hands me this cup. So I take the cup, I take a drink, and I say, what is this? He says, it's wine. And in my head, I'm like, well, I already blew it. So I take a drink, I drink more. He then fires up a joint. This is one of the, my buddy's called the Glorious Five. This is one of the Glorious Five. I smoke with this guy, I drink. I get home and I say, holy moly, oh my God, you're right. I'm powerless. I had no defense. The next night I go to work. It's a Friday. That was Friday. Now it's Saturday. And I go to work. Same place. Same exact thing. I mean, it was like it was rewind. It's like Groundhog Day. He opens up the dollar bill. Oh my God. He takes the cup. He hands me the cup. I get home and I'm like, how did that happen? Well, I think you mentioned it, Judith. I wanted to drink. I changed my mind. Is how I thought of it. You know, you walk through all day, I'm not gonna drink, I'm not gonna drink. Good morning, good idea, good idea. You know, you go to a bar, 14 tequilas. You want anything? And I'm kinda trying and I'm kinda not. Well, around this time, my buddy Dan gets sober and he starts going to different meetings. And this is really where the story picks up because he starts going to these meetings and they're all men's meetings. And they're on the lower west side of Cleveland. If you're the lower anywhere in a city, it's not good. And nobody's like, oh, you know where we're going to move? No. And I'm going to these meetings. They're all men's meetings. They're all smoking meetings. And you walk in, and there's like 100 guys in this room, and the cigarette smoke's about here. And I was like, I'm new. So what? Okay, great. Good. And I would just sit there. My buddy Dan, you know, we start meeting people and all this, and I'm doing all this stuff, and I don't like these guys because they're tough and they're mean. You got a sponsor? No. You're not serious. You're probably going to die. And they would just look away, and I was like, you know, and it was one of those where I was like, do I know you? But I'm going around, and they tell me I got to get a sponsor, so I asked this guy, and I still don't want to be here, but I don't want you yelling at me anymore. So I say to this guy, I walk up to him. Now, he's just talking to somebody like this. You know, and I walk up, and I go, will you sponsor me? And he does this to me. No. And it was one of those where I was like, was that supposed to happen? I mean, you know, somebody can jump out and be like, you're punked. And then he turns to me, he says, look, I don't sponsor junkies. Because if I do, I could get you killed, and I don't want to get you killed. And I was like, thanks. But I didn't. Now, we're in a restaurant when this part happens. And I say, I didn't do drugs. And he starts screaming at me. BS! Look at you! And I'm like, what is happening? Now, the wait staff, because these guys went there all the time, they just didn't care. They were like, somebody's getting yelled at. Look at that guy. My buddy Dan goes, no, he's like this from drinking. And this guy goes, really? And I said, yeah. And then later, you know, like 30 years later, I was like, wait a minute, that wasn't a compliment. So he lays down the rules for me, and he says, here's how it goes. Look, I don't like you. I don't like you a little bit. We're not friends. I got grandkids your age. You're going to get to every meeting half an hour early. If you're not half an hour early, you're not allowed in. And I thought he was going to have you waiting at the door, and I come in, and they'd be like, bald guy, stupid. Nope, you can't come in. When you get to the meeting, you're going to shake everybody's hand. You're going to sit in the front row. You're going to keep your mouth shut. You're going to call me every day at 5:45. If you don't call me at 5:45, I'll assume you're dead, because when I find you, you will be. And I was like, okay. So this is what I'm doing. Now, I don't want to be here. And the best way I can describe it for you is I'm such a coward, and I'm sure nobody can relate to this. You know, and I'm sure we've all at least once seen that person. If you don't like it, get out, right? You don't like it, leave. Now, I can't do that because I'm not man enough. And I don't mean that, you know, I mean like I'm not grown up enough. I'm not adult enough. I need you to tell me. And all of a sudden, here's where God comes in, because that's the son of a gun. All of a sudden, all the yelling, I mean, I would walk into meetings and these guys would just start yelling. And I was just like, I haven't even said anything. But all of a sudden, they stopped doing that. I walk in, how you doing, kid? Okay. Because now I know when you tell me to leave, I'm going to be like, deuces, which wasn't a saying then, but it was for me. I'm out. I'll see you guys later. Off I go. Because I had, you know, I call it Fisher Price, my first mustache, you know, the little wispy stash that, you know, 18-year-olds get. You know, so I'm like, I could go buy a beer. No, not really. But the second you tell me to leave, I'm done. I'm out of here. And what happened was it didn't happen. So now I've got to bait you. I've got to poke you. So I would sit and I'd be like, going to meetings early is kind of stupid. Get here this early. It's stupid ass people. And these guys would look over and they go, yeah, I understand. And I'm like, understand? 2 weeks ago you told me you were going to kill my kids that I don't even have if I didn't stop. And I was pushing buttons and pushing buttons. What God said to me was, no, you want to leave, you leave. Do it on your own, not anybody else. Because I love that. It's your fault. You know, when the idea of coming out here came up, I told my wife, man, I don't want to do this. Why? Because it's hot down there. I don't like hot. And she was like, but you get to carry the message. Yeah, but it's going to be hot. If I can carry the message and be cold, and she's just like, you know, she's a dummy because she picked me. 6 billion people in the world. My sister told her this once. 6 billion people in the world, and you picked him. So I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm drinking a little bit here and there. I'm sneaking. Anybody here ever done that? Yeah, just a little bit. Don't tell anybody though, because nobody will notice. And I just want out. And here's my last drunk. My last drunk is November 12th, 1989. It was a Sunday. And this guy knocks on my front door and he's got my wallet in his hand. And I said, that's my wallet. He goes, yeah, I found it down the street, just sitting there. Now, I don't have an ID. I have, you know, that little card that comes with your wallet? You can fill out your information. That was my ID. I filled that all out. He brought it back. I had money in there, and it's gone. And I said, what happened to the money? He goes, I don't know. I found it down on the street, and it had your address, so I thought I'd bring it back. But the money's gone. I know. I didn't take it. What happened? He's like, oh, look, man, I told you what happened. Have a good day. And he leaves. I know what happened. I knew then and I know now. I have a sister who has severe mental problems. One of her problems is she takes stuff that's not hers. She's since passed on, but I knew this. I knew what happened. Here's the way my alcoholic mind works. See, because my resentment against my dad is this. I am struggling through life. I want to drink. I can't drink. I got a pretty good idea. It's not a good idea, but my dad is living the life that we're supposed to live. He takes care of his family. He loves the people around him. He's a man of faith. He goes to church. He takes care of that. He puts his family first. What a sucker. And I hate that. I hate that because how can I really rebel against that? So when this guy hands me this and I know what happened, I say to myself, when he gets home, because they're at the grocery store, him and my mom, when he gets home, he's going to pay. He hasn't paid anything, but I'm ready. When he comes home and I start screaming and I'm yelling and ranting, and the wrestling interview comes out, and the fingers and the hands and my eyes are this, I'm just nuts because I've got untreated alcoholism and all I want to do is not hurt, and I'm hurting. And when I drink, I hurt even more, and I don't understand that, but I don't want to hurt. All this stuff, right? So we get into it, and I go upstairs, and I'm out. And the last thing I remember him saying to me, and I think you'd mentioned this, you get an or, knock this off or get out. All I heard was get out. And I went upstairs. I got like $6 in change, my cigarettes, and I in this like backpack. And he's just like, where are you going? And I go up, and I go to kick the attic door off the hinges. One comes off, so it looks silly. And I storm away, and I don't need to, and all of a sudden I get in his face. And what came out of my mouth then was, I'm going to show you, I can drink. I can do this. I'm not alcoholic. I'm not like you people. And he's like looking around like, who are you talking to? I don't know what to. And off I go. And the guy whose car I smashed up, the guy, he actually went with me to my first meeting. I go down to his house, and I say, what's on, baby? Let me backtrack just a little bit. As I'm leaving, my brother and sister are sitting in the living room. This is 1989. My brother's 9, my sister's 7. And they're playing. And I walk by, and they look up, and they say, are you getting thrown out again? I said, yeah. And they went, oh, okay. And I went back, because it's so common. I'm just a complete monster. My mother told me one time, you're my son, and I love you, but I don't like you. And there's times I wish you weren't born. Mothers shouldn't say that to kids, but kids shouldn't push their mother. I don't blame her for that at all. That's on me, my behavior. So my mother's holding the door open. She's not angry. Probably was, but she's not showing out, as the kids like to say. She's just holding the door open. And as I walk out, I turn around because I'm ready, come on, let me have it. And she very calmly says, look, go on the streets, go die, go do what you're going to do. Just don't do it here because we're tired. And she shut the door, and it was so anticlimactic. I'm waiting for the big Hollywood ending. Just imagine if in a Hollywood movie, in the very beginning, there's the monster and the guy comes out with a gun. Pew! Monster's dead, your movie's 4 minutes. That's how I felt. I had this thing planned and it didn't work. So I go down to this guy's house, I tell him, and he says to me, no, I'm not drinking with you, no. Because every time you drink, you do stupid things, I pay the price for them, you wreck something of mine, I got a girlfriend, I got this great job, I'm living in this house, my life is great, leave me alone. And I say, okay. But I don't leave. I go in upstairs, even though that really says leave, right? Nah, it's not me. I go upstairs in his bedroom. He's got a bottle of Black Velvet sitting on a stereo. I pick that bottle of Black Velvet up, and I take the lid off, and I smell it. I know that smell. I can smell it now. And I set it down, and I'm looking at the bottle, and what's going through my head, what keeps bouncing around, one's too many, 20's not enough. First drink will get you drunk. You can't, it's not the caboose that kills you, it's the engine, blah, 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 blah. All that BS you guys are talking about, right? So I'm looking at it, and I take this drink, and it hits my mouth, and I swallow it. And you know that warm feeling? And I went, the exhale. And he rips the bottle out of my hand, and he says, da, 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 da. And I just, for whatever reason, it wasn't planned. I look up on him, I said, it's too late, brother. Started, I got to finish. Not going out on one drink. And I go down to the store. My last drunk was a bottle of Mad Dog 2020 grape. Did you know that actually stands for Mogan David? I didn't know that. And I was like, no kidding. It got the vintages by the week, I think. But so I drink this. I go down. I get this bottle of wine. I embarrass myself in front of all these people that know me. This girl I had been dating at one point, her mom picks me up because she sees I'm drunk. And she's like, oh my God, I want to help. She's just a sweet lady. She just passed away. A wonderful human being. She's driving me around, trying to sober me up, trying to figure out what to do with me. And I'm flipping everybody off in the car. Because I'm a prince. And this is what I wanted. And I'm going to live in this little brick incinerator. It's probably about one of these squares is the size of it. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I could put like carpet down or something. I got to live outside. Now, if you know anything about, it's probably not Canada cold, but Cleveland in November is cold. And the longer I'm outside, the drunker I get. Because, I mean, nobody can relate to this, but man, I drink fast. Shot glass, give me a water glass and move out of the way. Because I'm probably going to throw up. I might wet myself. Or I might just decide to relieve myself right here. So you probably don't want to be standing right in front of me. It's the landing zone. And I'm drunk, and all of a sudden, it starts to occur to me what happened, because now I'm cold. So what does every alcoholic do when they're in trouble? They go home. So I stumble back home. I've humiliated myself in front of everybody. You told me I couldn't stop at one. You were right. I don't know this at that point, because I decided to take this drink. I go home, and I try to open the door. My mother comes to the door. She opens it, and she looks out, and she goes, nope. No, no, no. I had called my sponsor. I said, I think I need to go to detox. He said, I think you need to get your head out of your hind end. And he hung up on me. And my father comes to the door, and he says to my mom, and he takes me inside. We go in the kitchen. I'm leaning against the stove like this. And he's talking to me, and I'm not really listening because I'm drunk. This is what I wanted. And he says this thing, blah, 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 blah. And then he says, if you ever drink again, I'll kill you. I mean, I made $1 million. I've been awake for a month, hyperbole, right? And I go, all right. And he says, no, look at me. Look. I'll go to prison. I will spend the rest of my life behind bars rather than watch you destroy my family and destroy my son. I'm not doing it anymore. And my thought was, that's a little much. So I go upstairs, I go to bed, the bed's spinning, I'm laying on my back, I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. The next morning I wake up, I have this really good job, I'm working at a local sandwich shop called Mr. Hero. I call in, I can't just tell my boss, hey, this happened. I tell him, oh my God, it's so terrible. And because he knew I was in AA, because I talked about it, even though I hated it. And I worked with this guy that also had a graduation thing from AA, from a treatment center. And I hated that guy. He would, you know why the second month of AA is better than the first? I don't know, because by the second month you're drinking again, and I'd just be like, brrr. But I wanted to drink, but I don't want you making fun of it. So I'm sitting, and I'm off work, and I'm having this thought, and this is the moment of clarity. This is exactly how fast it went, too. I'm sitting, and this guy's name's Terry. I'm thinking about Terry. Terry's having a party. Seeing as I'm not in AA anymore, I can go to that party, can mingle, meet all the ladies, hello, ladies, or whatever it is they say. I can socialize, I can do all this, and I don't have to drink. But if I do drink, I'm just going to have a couple, I don't want to knock this over. Pinky out. Hey, oh my God, you look great. Good to see you, Pinky. You got to have the pinky out, I think. But if I do get real drunk, maybe Terry will let me sleep on his couch. And I don't know why, but God went like this. And he kissed me right on the forehead. And I had a very clear thought, clear as day. And the clear thought I had was, I'm 18 years old and I'm going to die. And I started to cry like a baby. And I started calling my sponsor and he didn't answer. And I started calling people and I started doing these things. And nobody, I got a hold of my friend Dan's mom. And I told her about what a piece of crap I was. And she said, yeah, I heard. Yeah. And how stupid I was. Yeah. And how dumb. And yeah. And she said, just hold on because Danny will be home. And when he comes home, I'll have him call you. And I'm just a mess because I know I'm going to die. You guys were right. I don't want to tell you you're right, but you were right. So what I do is I call Danny's brother, Billy, who was sober at the time, and he comes and picks me up. And he's got a 2-year-old, and the little girl's wearing a snowsuit where she's stuck out like this, And Billy's driving this huge boat of a car, and I get in the front seat with him because I call him. He says, when do you want me to come get you? I said, no, man, I'm not calling the shots. You are. You tell me what to do, and I'll do it. You want me to walk to your house? I'll walk to your house. So he comes and gets me. And I get in the car and he goes, you got to hold on to Sarah. I guess car seats weren't invented in Cleveland in 1989. So I'm holding on to this little girl like this We get to his house, and I'm alternating between laughing and crying. Oh, everything's good. I'm going to die and all this. And he's just looking at me like, man, you're a disaster. And we get to his house, and I walk in the back door, and he says, I'm going to get Sarah undressed. Just go on in and have a seat. I walk in, and there's dirt, like from plants, all over the floor. And plants are laying on the floor. And I walk in, and I look. I'm not going to say anything. What if he throws me out? I'm going to die. I don't say anything. And he sees me looking, and he says, oh, when you called and I was on the phone with you, Sarah saw the leaves, you know, and she walked over and she grabbed every plant, pulled every plant down. He said, I was on the phone with you watching her going, And I said, well, you could have just, you know, cleaned it up. He says, no, you called me and you needed help. That was the most important thing in the world. Now, he's not sober anymore. But I think about that lesson whenever I get an inconvenient phone call. And somebody says, this might not be a good time. I always say, no, it's great. And I'm thinking, this is the worst time ever. So I started back, and I started going back to meetings, and I started doing things, and I had the same sponsor, and I got a co-sponsor, and they started taking me through the steps and the four absolutes. We started working those, and that was awful. I'm going back to meetings. My first meeting was Stella Maris Monday Men's, and I'm chewing on my finger, and I chewed a hole in my finger, and it was bleeding, and I didn't care, and this guy says to me, my sponsor, I'm in his car after the meeting because he told Billy, I'll take him home. You know, all the old men talk like that. And he had this toothpick all the time. I'll take him home. Get in the car. And I was like, okay. I'm sitting in the back seat. He's talking about me with a guy like I'm not there. So I'm doing the tennis thing like this. And he says, kid, you might be constitutionally incapable of being honest with yourself. I said, oh, okay. Do you know what that means? Absolutely not. This is how he explained it to me. You're going to keep doing this. And you're going to incrementally feel worse. And you're going to die. And you're stupid. You're going to live a really, really long time. And that scared the daylights out of me. Because you told me two things that I didn't think were true. They're not possible. I'm going to live a long time and die drunk. Or I'm going to die real fast. And I knew they were both true. So I got active and involved. I started doing things. You started taking me to meetings. I became the ashtray guy. But they didn't call me that. Because I complained a lot. So use your imagination. And I would go to meetings, and they'd see me, and they'd go, boy! And my buddies would be like, I think they're talking to you. Yeah. And I'd come, and I'd sit with these old men, and I hated it. It was terrible. It was awful. And I did just enough step work that I felt better, you know? And I started doing these things, and my life started to improve. I started to change. See, the book says we don't talk about what it was like. We talk about what we were like. And I started to feel better. I started to get better and on. And man, I'm starting to build a relationship with my family. And it's great. I became an older brother. Finally, I became a son. And I'm so happy. And my mom calls me one day and says, I think they're moving your dad to California. I said, it's not going anywhere. That only happens in the movies. And then they moved him to California. And I said, I'm never living that state, ever. You hear me? Are you looking? Never. Never, never, never. So 2 years later, I'm in California. And they do it differently. There's a lot of hugging, a lot of hand swinging. I love you. And I'm like, you don't even know who I am. Some guy went to hug me once. I was like, oh, whoa, what are you doing? He goes, I was going to give you a hug. No, you're not. You better think about that because I don't know. Oh, you just want to hug the women. No, I don't want to hug anybody. I was scared. I didn't know I was scared. I'm 3,000 miles away from home. AA is different. So then what happens is I stop going to meetings for a year. I get in a relationship with this girl. I stop going to meetings for a year because you're wrong. I came back. The relationship ended. And I start doing these things. I get a sponsor. I get into the steps. At 19 years, my life goes like this. Because I got into the steps and I started to do it. And I started to confront these fears. How come I don't like hugging you? Because what if I hug you and you don't feel the same? I also found out, and some of you may not like this. I don't care. But I don't know anybody who doesn't like people. We're afraid of them. I'm afraid of people. That's why I tell you I don't like it. That's why I keep you like this. Because I'm afraid of you. What if you don't love me the same way I love you? Then what? What do I do then? And I got active and involved. I got plugged in. I had this sponsor. I've had a couple people in my life die in AA. Mike Shuga passed away. That broke my heart. He was 71. He drank a lot of coffee and smoked cigarettes. Of course he died. He died on a Thursday. I got a sponsor that night. When I was in California, a guy named Joe Stovering died. He was one of the best men I've ever met in my entire life. I named my dog after him. That's how much I love him. And I'm doing all these things, and my sponsor's name is Gomer, and we're doing all these things, and one day he says to me, you know, I'm not going to live forever. And I got a resentment. I went home and I wrote out a fourth step and I said, I have to do a fifth step with you. He said, okay, I have a resentment. Okay, against who? You, me. Yeah, why? Because you're gonna die and you're gonna leave me alone. And he said, well, yeah, but you're gonna be okay. And when he did pass, we had this big celebration of life for him, and I got to go. I got another sponsor, and I got to go to this thing. It's the sponsor I have today. His name's Johnny. He lives in Georgia. You know, I'm going to tell you real quick what I do, and then I want to tell you about my family a little bit. What I do today is I go to a lot of meetings. I lost my job. I get nothing but time. I'm applying for jobs because now you can do it online. And I go to a lot of meetings, and I run around with my guys, and they make fun of me. They say things like, hey, are you working tomorrow? Oh, no, you're free. These are my friends. And these are the guys I run with. They take care of me. I go to a lot of meetings. I have a sponsor that I work with. I have sponsees that I work with. I do these things. I try to put this stuff into my life. I try to connect with God. There's a couple things I want to tell you about real quick, and then I'll end. That woman that I dated when I was in California, when I dated her, she had this little girl. The girl was one. And when we split up, that girl was five, and that broke my heart. I don't mind leaving you, the grown-up, but that kid. And I asked her, can I still see Courtney? And she said, yeah. That girl's 25. She may be a grandpa. I used to watch her do little kid stuff, and I would just stare at her. And somebody said to me one time, what are you thinking about when you're looking at her? I said, that is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my whole entire life. And now she's got this son, and I feel guilty, but I'm like, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. You know, my wife, I got married in AA. You know, my sobriety date's the second most important day of my life. My marriage is my third most important day in my life. And my wife and I got married, and it was like an AA meeting. Started with serenity prayer, closed with the Lord's Prayer. Had a bunch of people there. Did the 11-step prayer. No fourth or fifth steps there, but... And we got, you know, and I have this relationship. You know, my dad, one of the greatest things I ever got to do was my dad was in this, and some of you heard this, he was in this massive car accident, and he's laying in the hospital, and I went to see him because he had a heart attack, and he couldn't feed himself, so I asked the nurse, can I do it? She said, yeah, and I got to sit down and feed him his dinner, and as I was doing it, I'm looking in his eyes, and it's not, yeah, you owe me. It wasn't any of that. It was, I'm so glad it's you. It's somebody I trust and love, and I fed him his meal, and I got up, I was working graveyard, and I got up and I left. And I was different. When he died, they actually let us put his box into the hole and cover the hole up. My siblings and I covered the hole up. We got to bury my dad. We got to bury my mom. That's the stuff you gave me. Just put this stuff in your life and see what happens. Okay, that's what happened. My wife has a daughter that I have a good relationship with. That's my other stepdaughter. You know, I have a couple siblings. My sister lives in California with us. And I say to her one time, you ever think about moving to Ohio? She goes, no. And I went, how could you say no? It's the best place ever. And she's like, for you. When we moved back to Ohio, she came with us. She followed us about a year later so she could be by her big brother. And I want to say how sweet that is, but I was like, it's cute, but you're 44. You know, but you've given me these gifts. You've given me these things. And what you've asked me to do is pay it back. Pay it forward. Help somebody else. If I got a vision for you, the feelings you have right now, don't let them go. Give them to somebody else. Find that person with 4 days, 5 days. Find that person. I knew a guy with 25 years. He was miserable. So I was really pissed at him, and I wanted to yell at him. I said, hey, if you want help, I'll help you. And he said, okay, take me through the steps. I was like, damn it. And his life changed, not because of me, because of those. That's what happens. What I want to see everybody have is a good day, because the best day of my entire life, the greatest day of my life is today, not because I'm standing up here. It's going to be because I'm going to be down in a minute, but because this is what everything's been about. I'm going to take what you guys have given me and give it to other people. God answered a punk prayer, and he put me with some of the greatest human beings I've ever met. Thank you.